Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Thursday Night Football starting up over on Raider Nation Radio 920. A great place to watch Thursday Night Football tonight or Monday Night Football with us or Sundays all day long. And don't forget about the CFP is Ellis Island in the front yard. They've got an all-you-can-eat special, all-you-can-drink specials as well. All of these packages are less than $50. The all-you-can-eat menu, 30-plus items on the menu, pasta, smoked brisket sandwich, nachos, two different burgers. And the all-you-can-drink beer includes their craft brews, which Silver Reef Brewing does their craft brews. I love the Heffy. And a lot of good gaming things going on right now at gaming specials, gaming promotions at Ellis Island, including New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. $15,000 free play giveaway. And don't forget, Boomer Sportsbook is on the ground there. You want to on the ground there. You want to download the Boomer's mobile account. You get up to $250 in bonus bets, depending on your deposit size. Same game parlays, there's generally boost and bonuses on those, and right now they're in the midst of Boomer's 12 days of Christmas opt-in. You bet at least $20 every day and you're going to move up the tiers for great rewards and more bonus bets at Boomer's at Ellis Island. It's on Koval and Flamingo. Get on in for one of these football Mondays. Actually, you know what, I was going to mention every day the football's on. It's on every day now because of bowl games, so
yep,
great place to watch football. Let's talk a little WNBA here and then get to some UNLV football-related items. There's a conversation coming up with Chief Borders. I talked to Chief today. He's the edge rusher for the Rebels defense, one of them. I saw the note come down, and I know this is just another step in what could happen, but did something happen with labor discussions on the player side of the WNBA? They are ready to go if they need to go.
Yeah, the WNBA Players Association, they announced today that the players voted to authorize his executive committee to call a strike when necessary. As, you know, CBA negotiations are dragging on, and the statement is basically this. Players have spoken through a decisive vote with historic participation. Our membership has authorized the WNBPA's executive committee to call a strike when necessary. The players' decision is an unavoidable response to the state of negotiations with the WNBA and its teams. Time and again, the players' thoughtful and reasonable approach has been met by the WNBA and its teams with a resistance to change and a recommitment to the draconian provisions that have unfairly restricted players for nearly three decades. The players' vote is neither a call for an immediate strike nor an intention to pursue one. Rather, it's an emphatic affirmation of the players' confidence in their leadership and their unwavering solidarity against ongoing efforts to divide, conquer, and undervalue them. Let it be known the players remain united, resolute, and prepared to fight for their value and their future.
Not to put you on the spot, what's the timeline on this thing? When do they have to make a decision? When could they go on strike?
I would say they need to figure things out by the end of January. Unrivaled starts January 5th, and so a lot of the heavy hitters are there already. Your executive committee members are there, including Kelsey Plum, who's a vice president. Neka Gumake, I can't remember. I don't think she's in Unrivaled, I can't remember. But nevertheless, of course, Kathy Engelbert was there last year. I don't think she'll be going
Didn't make
to,
a good impression.
Apparently, according to Nafisa Collier.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. And the WNBA responded, and I will say this. And I'm pro women's sports. I'm pro WNBA. Somewhat agree with the statement that the WNBA put out. We are aware that the players have voted to authorize the executive committee to call a strike. While we acknowledge the players' right to authorize a future work stoppage, we strongly disagree with the WNBPA's characterization of the current state of negotiations, which fundamentally misrepresents the ongoing discussions. The statement's longer, but I agree with that beginning, and basically it's just saying we're doing what we can. They've budged. Don't make it sound like they're not, you know, they're making it sound as if, well, these draconian this and that. I mean, when you're talking first and foremost, they want equal pay. They want share revenue, the revenue share. They've gone from a maximum salary of, let's just round down to quarter of a million. It's a little bit more, that $260,000+, where the max salary for one player could be $1 million. The minimum salary right now, someone like Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark on rookie contracts are making like $66,000 to $76,000 a year. The minimum contract would be, the lowest salary would be around $500,000. That's budging. That's moving in the right direction. Right now, what's taking place where they're unhappy, I think, is some of the counter negotiations, one of them being housing. Okay? Right now, you get a stipend based on the cost of living in the city and the market that you're playing in. So in Vegas, whatever the stipend may be, you know, $1,200 a month. New York, it's going to be higher, right? They're taking all that away. So you're getting a significant raise, making five times the amount, whereas now, but you want to keep your housing. The one thing I will say in regards to that, if it comes up, is you never really hear football players, NBA, baseball players, family men, right? Well, we're moving you here, there. Those guys also aren't bringing their kids wherever they're going. So they're still being moms during the season. So there's that to consider. Nevertheless, you're getting a significant salary hike. Housing could be a negotiating chip. The other thing is the schedule. The WNBA is proposing to move it up. It would bump into some of these off-season leagues. Athletes Unlimited, Unrivaled, it would shorten. It would also, training camp would start while the March Madness is going on. They wanted more time off. My thing is this. Don't make it sound as if the WNBA is not trying. They're doing what they're trying to do to negotiate. Also, at some point, ladies, the complaining and moaning has to cease, and at least bargain and stop pointing and saying, well, we don't, it's like nothing is, they're not happy with anything. But the fact of the matter is, okay, during the season, you're complaining about back-to-back nights. Well, we played in Phoenix, now we got to go to Vegas, and then we got one day off and we play in L.A. Okay, let's talk about hockey players that take hits and play in Utah, then Anaheim, then Colorado, and talk about the altitude, and they're playing a physical game. Let's talk about Major League Baseball, 162, I mean, they become used to that. You're playing a daily schedule or a game where you're playing every other day. It's the schedule, and you know what? If this is the solution and you don't like it, then you come up with the schedule. You're complaining that you don't like the schedule. Okay, then come up with it. Help us make it. If you don't like our proposal that we start training camp in March, then you figure it out. What do you propose? You want to go into December? All of a sudden, now what are we going to hear? Well, we got families. Now our holidays are cut off. I mean, it's like, hey, I would say right now the WNBA is doing everything they can. The WNBPA, they're standing, as they say, 10 toes down. But ladies, don't make it sound as if the WNBA is not trying.
We're going to take a break in like 2 minutes because I want to get the Chief Borders, UNLV, get you ready for this bowl game. They're playing in the Frisco Bowl. That's next Tuesday. Want to remind you, a great way to play the game tonight for Thursday Night Football is the William Hill mobile sports app. You download that William Hill mobile sports app. You can get up to $250 in bonus bets. Bet anywhere on the go in the state of Nevada, and they've got great parlay boost. And you know, one of the places you could play if you want, you go over if you want to use the kiosk. Arizona Charlie's on Decatur is a really good spot right now. They've got specials out there: River Rock Pizza and Pasta, New Year's specials at the Sourdough Cafe and the Pizza Joint. They got deals on suites for $99. Gaming is excellent over there at the William Hill Race and Sportsbook with Arizona Charlie's with the True Rewards card. So take advantage of all that is going on right now with William Hill and their sportsbooks and the mobile sports account. On the way back, we're going to talk to Chief Borders, one of the edge rushers for the UNLV defense.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Some college football news coming down the wire.
Uh-oh.
Break. Just comings and goings. You know, we never really talked about Brennan Marion and what he wound up pulling with Sacramento State. He stayed 1 year and is now the OC at Colorado. I've had some people text me from Colorado, and they're like, hey, what's Brennan Marion like? And I'm like, well, he's an interesting guy. We'll get into it more.
That's one way to put it.
This announcement a little while ago, Purdue defensive coordinator Mike Scheer no longer with the program and will pursue other coaching opportunities. He was the DC here for 2 years, played for Odom. Odom swore by him, said he's a future head coach. So I don't know if this means that Scheer has a good opportunity elsewhere, but it seems kind of weird that they would announce that he's no longer with the program and pursuing other coaching opportunities without the job. So wonder what happened, Willie, because those guys seemed like they were tied together at the hip. There's a lot of, again, I'm not tying this to some of the crazy stuff that's going on, but we'll wait to see what the news is there. Again, not tying it at all to the story I'm going to mention. Ohio will be without its head coach. I think they knew that was going to happen. That was back at the beginning of December. We found out today, or actually yesterday, that Brian Smith was fired at Ohio. Why do I mention Ohio? That's the opponent in the Frisco Bowl that UNLV will be taking on. They're going to have the DC as the interim coach. I have no idea how kids are going to react to that. Now, it's not like it just happened. It's not like reality was, hey, he's going to come back. Now they're shocked this week. But this can't be something easy to deal with after you had a pretty good season and then your coach is gone. And then you know, in all likelihood, I don't think I missed the news that the DC got named the permanent solution at Ohio. But that's a lot to deal with as a kid, don't you think? In terms of distractions and motivation?
Well, my question is, let's just err on the side of caution in that the accusations are lean toward that they're true.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a blessing in disguise for those kids.
Okay.
It's like, whew, good, that was a mess. You know what I mean? Like, it's less of a distraction now, not more of a distraction because it's there. I mean, if the media is hounding them, asking them questions, I get it. But
so if you didn't hear what happened, this guy Brian Smith was fired officially a couple days ago. First thing that came out was, hey, the guy was drinking on the job. He had, you know, booze in the office. He's bringing people into the office. He's drinking. And then the school came out and said, hey, there's some public appearances. He was, you know, disheveled his appearance. He was drinking. Then we find out through a FOIA request from multiple sources that the school says they fired him because of an extramarital affair. The affair was with an undergrad. Smith's lawyer fires back and says, not married anymore, was separated at the time. Then we've also found out that Smith said the relationship with the undergrad ended once he found out she was a student at the school, which that one sounds weird because I thought it was a lengthy relationship. So I don't know what the hell is going on here. I thought he might have some legal ground to stand on, but I suspect there's going to be a lot more that comes out that ain't going to sound good on the coach's side. Not from the coach's side, about the coach. Just a gut feeling. And I don't have like a source, or I didn't talk to anyone at Ohio today.
So he'll be coaching at some remote town on Friday nights instead of Saturday afternoons?
Who knows? Maybe he'll be, like you said, we don't know the whole story, so maybe he'll be exonerated.
Well, and I didn't know the second part. When we talked about this early, I didn't know the second part about that, where he said, oh, I didn't know she was a student.
Well, I had seen the note that, well, they had met like somewhere off campus, and I don't know what's going on. You just knew on the drinking part that because he was boozing or drinking in his office, that could not be the only reason why he was dumped.
Yeah, because I have a problem with that, to be honest with you. I get the clause. I read the policy and the, you know, rule number this, that, the other. But I've been in press boxes for college games in and out of town where afterwards they're serving beer to the media. Now, it's not the same. I get it. But nevertheless, It's after work, I don't know. I mean, I get it. You probably shouldn't have had a bottle sitting there, but you're celebrating or you had a big win. Hey, let's do a quick snoot, and you pour a little shot and you toast, and, you know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Feels
I
mad. Guess, feels I mean, madman-esque.
He's not. Nobody's walking around. Nobody was walking around saying he's walking around plastered. He's hammered. He's can't
maybe,
walk.
Here's the thing. Maybe they've soft sold it. Maybe he was. I don't. Maybe he's known as a drunkard, or
something. Maybe just maybe they added that on because it fits within. Yeah. But the whole Sharon Moore thing. It's like, hey, we don't need all this. We don't need a mess. We don't, whatever the case is. But you know what? We can throw this in.
Well, this is why we like to get the full story before we start running to some conclusions, right? And I'll give you a good example. So UNLV in this offseason brought in another 35-plus transfers. And this was a different group of transfers in terms of their background than, say, Odom had for the first 2 years or for the 2 years he was here. Odom brought in 50-plus new players each year, right? Mullen in total did the same thing. By the way, they've won 30 games with this formula the last three seasons. That's pretty amazing. But one of the things that happened with this group that was different, you had guys who had played like high level or were part of teams at high level power four schools, like lots of them. But they'd had two and three, and this was a fourth stop for some of them. Chief Borders is one of those guys. Chief was at Florida, Nebraska, and Pitt. And I saw comments when they landed him. And you list all the schools, and people are like, oh, what's wrong with this guy? Boy, they have a group of these guys. This thing's going to implode. Look at all these problems. And I remember talking to Chief in the preseason, and he almost got a little insulted. And I was like, hey, I'm just bringing up what people say. And, man, this kid could have turned out to be a more solid citizen. He was a leader. I saw him on the field and on the sidelines as a sideline guy for UNLV. And he was always stepping up, always calming people down. He had an intensity about him. And I had a chance to talk to him today, and I started off the conversation just asking about the experience this 1 year at UNLV. And, you know, give me a word to describe what it was like for you and what it was like for the team.
A lot of vitality. You know, in the beginning, it was 50-plus transfers, but, you know, we learned how to kindle our relationships from coming from all over the country, and that's what makes it so special. One thing we knew is we love football as a whole and that we all want to win. So that was our main goal. I mean, 10-3 is what our outcome is right now. We have an opportunity to go 11-3. So let's go take heed on it and seize that opportunity. I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot of relationships. You know, a lot of my guys in the locker room that I'm pretty sure these relationships will last, you know, furthermore years down the road. I learned a lot about ball, just being around PG and, you know, his defensive mindset. He's a great coordinator and just allowing us to just really be versatile within the scheme of things. Going against Anthony Calandra, you know, as well as our offense, you know, offensive alignment, just very in-depth, you know, when it comes to being skilled in the this game we call football. I'm very grateful of every opportunity, and I know it's going to prepare me for the next level coming up. So,
Chief Borders is with us. 10-3 record. Yes, how do you look at the season? I just talked to Day-Day Reynolds, and he said, you know what, for me it was a little bit, you know, disappointing in the end.
Yeah.
How do you feel, and how does the rest of the team feel coming off a loss?
All in all, it comes down to, you know, the plays. We got to make more plays, right? We got to make more plays in the big time moments when it's needed. And I wouldn't say it's more so disappointing, but it's another way we can learn from this opportunity. I'm not happy about our outcome at all. I wanted to go win the Mountain West Championship, wanted to go win the conference full and full. But, you know, this is a stepping stone for us. You know, the outlook that we have to look on it as pawn of, you know, we got to just take our steps in this moment, right? It's okay. It's a sour taste in our mouth, but, you know, we got one more to go do it to fulfill, you know, what we wanted to conquer in the beginning of the season. So let's go do that.
How important is getting an 11th win and finishing the season with a win for setting up the future for the guys who are going to be here in terms of, hey, these are the expectations?
Oh, yeah. So when I come back, man, I want to, you know, most definitely come back, and it's the same type of accountability, composure, you know, and more well-rounded. You know, as a captain and a leader of this team, I just want to, you know, come back and just embrace, you know, the guys that are playing in the, you know, this beautiful color red and being a rebel, right? Just having that type of impact. I want it to just continue this beautiful way that we have going on being winning and winners at this program. So I'm excited for it.
What's the intensity like at practice? Every bowl game is different for every team. Some teams have one foot out the door going to the holidays. They don't want to be there. What are you saying?
As I said, man, we love to win. We're always competitive, you know, that I feel like we're, you know, we handle our business, right? We've got to get the sour taste that we have out of our mouth. And at the end of the day, really just have fun. It's bowl game, you know, just last game of the season, man. Just go out there, have fun, and really just play for one another. You know, it comes down to the end of it. We already knew, you know, coming in here, we want to win. So really play for each other and everybody hold themselves accountable, do their 111 on the field. We should handle business.
For you individually, Caleb Herring, who's on the broadcast with me, Caleb played here. He played quarterback here. And
okay.
When he talks about you, he's talked about the challenges that you guys on the edge have on defense. And he's called it a conflict of assignment, that there's so much thinking, and especially against option teams or running quarterbacks. How do you think you process this that this year? And you're going to face it again in this game. Because this guy can run, that quarterback.
100%. When it comes to, you know, just knowing what to do on that edge, right? So you can get so many different type of schemes or things. You could get a gap hit, or you could get a base hit, a hinge block. Or, you know, you can get a reach block, you know, tackles, tight ends. You know, they're always trying to scheme up different things, especially getting chipped on throughout the season. That happens a lot. Either with the running back or the tight end. But here and there, I mean, it's a lot of different checks, a lot of different calls, right? If the running back flips, you know, that can just change the scheme of things. It all depends on what type of calls that we have going on. But, you know, it's it can be an adverse subject at times, but when you take the thinking out of it, that's when people just play fast. And I believe PG allows us to do that when it comes to being in this scheme of defense where it's not too chaotic, where we have to change every call every time. But it gives us a great mindset moving forward, especially in the next level.
What have you seen on film from this quarterback? The dude rolled up over 800 yards on the ground.
Yeah, he's very elusive, right? Versatile quarterback. We really want to get him passing the ball, right? Hold that pocket, you know, really want force him to throw, right? Once he get out of the pocket, you know, that's where he starts to scramble and do his thing and, you know, rally around a little bit. But once we control the pocket, right, get after the quarterback, stop the run game, of course, I believe we should, you know, handle business on the outcome.
How many bowl games have you been to?
Bowl games have I been to? I believe this will be my third one.
Okay.
Yeah, third one.
Do you have a memory of past either games or the experience or something you got in the goodie bag or something you know that you did with the sightseeing?
Yeah, my freshman year, Gasparilla Bowl with Florida. It was a great bowl game. You know, we had some, you know, cool headphones, good nice gear. It was in Tampa, Florida, so it was good vibes. My family's able to drive in. Those are the things that make me happy. And as well, I'm looking forward to this one. So Frisco, Texas, I got a couple of family members out there, so I'm happy to go out there and ball.
Chief Waters is with us. I want to get you in this conversation because you played at all different levels.
Yes, sir.
Now you're a group of five. There's been a push about the last 10 days. I'm hearing a lot of big names in college football, a lot of media people.
You're right.
At group of five, James Madison, and Tulane, this is too much.
Okay.
This is too much. I've also heard people say, you know, they can't compete, and, oh, it might be a safety issue, which I bristle at. I'm like, I see the UNLV roster, and I see guys who have, you know, come from Power Four, plenty of size. There's no safety
100%.
Issue. And I think, you tell me what you've seen. I think a lot of times guys who are initially recruited a group of five and stay a group of five, it's just an optics thing. They might be a little bit smaller, and that's why they didn't get recruited.
Yeah.
You know, at different positions.
Exactly.
I mean, you're a power forward size guy.
Yes,
but there could be a defensive end who's 6'2"
exactly.
and 235 who could be freaking awesome.
Yeah.
So give me your take on this whole push now. Hey, get the group of five out of here. They need to have their own playoff. They can't compete. It's a safety issue.
Yeah, no. It's definitely not a safety issue. Let's just keep it real. You know, it's not a safety issue. At the end of the day, football is football, man. If you want to compete, you want to play ball, right? Line your best guys up and handle business, man. If you want to make excuses, then leave that for the other guys, man. Keep everything in the big camaraderie of football, right? That's what we live. That's what we breathe. You know, that's what we love. Like, I'm just happy to be a part of something that's so special, right? The opportunity to play. But, man, bring every conference in together to see what type of guys who can bring, you know, the different calibers, especially with the transfer portal. I mean, teams are always picking up guys from different schools, so you never know what you can get. It's always a wild card. Or a joker, you know, to be a national championship. So we shall see in the days to come. Because last time I checked, James Madison has been undefeated every year since they, I believe, 2023, I believe. Yeah, so.
They moved up from FCS to FBS.
Exactly.
They're killing it at FBS. So
what's the big deal?
There's players everywhere.
I'm saying.
There's players everywhere. last couple things.
Yeah.
What's in your future? What do you want to do?
Definitely, you know, expound upon football. I love this sport. I love this game. It's most definitely a cherished moment for me to move on as well with, you know, Coach Mullen still being my coach right now. It's a surreal moment, actually, and being with my teammates. I had a full circle moment. And then here and there, I'm definitely I'm a limelight kind of guy. I like to, you know, embrace, share my testimony with people, share – you know, my beautiful stories and background. I love content creating. I love showing off, you know, my great, you know, heart and big skills of putting smiles on people's faces, and content creating has always been my biggest thing. But I also, one of the things I love to do is really pour into people. So psychology is one of my favorite things to do, and it's learning how the brain works and operate and navigate through adverse situations. So I'm leaning into that as well.
Good deal. That's exciting. Holidays, what are you going to do?
Spend time.
Where do you go right after the game?
After the game, I'm going to L.A. With my grandma to go be with family, and as well as my girl's family as well. So I'm excited about that. Just go spend time, get off my feet a little bit, go be in the mountains, go meditate, go just open up gifts and enjoy family. And then I'll bring it all together for when I train. You know, I'm excited for the next level.
Did you get to shop for gifts?
Oh, yeah.
It's tough. It's hard times.
Thank you,
man.
Amazon. I appreciate Amazon. Right. I was, you know, after practice, I was always, you know, trying to, you know, make things meet in the end. But Amazon was my best friend this year, so I'm happy.
Is there a person you were like, I have to get this person a gift?
Yeah.
They're the person I cherish.
Yeah, my girl. Yeah. Most definite. And then, you know, as well as my grandma and my mom as well. So I'm happy about that. And yeah, I'm excited for Christmas or holidays coming up, especially New Year's. It's a new beginnings.
Cool deal. It was fun covering you guys, and you guys had a great season. I'll see you down to the bowl game.
Likewise, boss, man. Appreciate you, man.
There he is, Chief Borders, one of the super seniors on this UNLV roster, a product of the transfer portal four times, and turned out to be a real cool dude, has some good interest post-football. I enjoyed that conversation, and I'm assuming he got a little scratch to come here, some NIL. And you know I'm a big supporter of the NIL. I'm a big supporter of the transfer portal. I think it is going to change college football for the good. I know it's different for people, so they get really frustrated. The old days weren't as good as you think they were. Yet some people can't deal with it. The Missouri coach, Eli Drinkwitz, constantly has put his foot in his mouth, complaining about how much players are making. He did a rant, or he went on a rant about 2 days ago, 3 days ago, and I was like, man, he's doing this again. Now I think we know why he went on the rant, because today, Bo Perbula, his quarterback that he brought in for a few million dollars, reportedly, is back in the portal.
Mm.
May go back to Penn State. Maybe the kid will come out when he lands somewhere and say, you know what, I was really tired of Eli Drinkwitz's toxicity. I'll give you another example. I don't know Pete Golding, and I think I know what he was trying to say here. In fact, I know what he was trying to say here, but he put his foot in his mouth. This is the interim coach with Ole Miss. And he makes one reference to where kids are living, and a lot of people took this the wrong way.
All the exterior factors, in my opinion, of what college football used to use was the NFL. And so you had elite players that wanted to get to NFL because they wanted that payday. Well, they've already got it now. All right, so they've got nice cars. They're in nice condos. Some are living in the country club by me. Right? They've already got what you used to have to work hard to. Right? They have. And so at the end of the day, if there's not that interior motivation to want to compete and want to be the best player at my position and want to be the best team in the country, to want to leave a legacy, right, for this team that's never been done here before, right, then you're going to fall short. And I think that's what gets lost in the recruiting process when you just go back to the tape and you're watching the tape. Like, does the guy love football, or does he love what football could do for them?
Right, but you live in the country club because that's your job. You're an expert. You're supposed to know. To the best of your knowledge, you're supposed to be a judge of if a kid is going to be hungry if you give him $200,000. So that comment in the middle about, oh, they live near me in the country club. Well, my first thought was, oh, it's Mississippi. Okay, well, that's on brand. Upset, huh, coach? I get it. And there are going to be kids who get the money and lose a little bit of their hunger, but that's on you.
You know,
this is all about being a good personnel judge of how kids are going to deal with setting changes and coming into some money. But in the end, giving them money is not a bad thing. The free labor stuff was nonsense. If you're going to make millions and millions of dollars, then the guys that you're making it with the help of, they deserve a cut.
They 100% deserve a cut, number one. Number two, I'm tired of hearing coaches, not that they say those exact words, that same exact verbatim, you know, are you playing for the love of football? You're playing for what football can do for you? You're playing, basically, you're saying for the money. Well, you know what? What about the numerous coaches that are bailing for bigger dollars and bigger prestigious jobs? Are you coaching because you love the sport, or are you coaching for what it can do for you?
Both.
Are you coaching?
How about the answer could be both?
Why not?
I love the money and I love football. It's a great job.
And how about this? The players are the reason that you're getting that money. You're putting them – yes, you have to coach them up, and you have to there's got to be player development. But unless those players are playing to their potential, guess what? You're not making your money. So they're the ones – their success, they're the reason you're getting those double-digit million-dollar coaching contracts.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So last night here on ESPN Las Vegas, we had a very good Josh Pastner radio show. The Rebels are not off the start that fans want them off to. Team's certainly disappointed. Josh Pastner is not thrilled. They're 4-6, and they've won some really good games on the road, but they've lost some games at home that are inexplicable, and the loss on Saturday against Tennessee State over at Leeds Family Forum in Henderson was just weird because UNLV had a lot of momentum. They just beat a pretty solid Stanford team, and then Tennessee State came in and they're like, hey, we're going to take your lunch money. You're going to punch you in the face. You're going to do nothing about it. And Josh Pastner came in yesterday on his radio show and listed a bunch of things that they need to get better at, things that they've been good at. And I had a bunch of follow-ups, and they kind of went right in a row here. And believe it or not, it's only three questions, but Pastner answers pretty completely here. And I told him, Tennessee State on Saturday night, last Saturday night, they came in, they went right through your chest in the lane. They kind of beat you up, and they went right at you.
It's interesting you said, I was all week long, I told the team, I said, man, this is a dangerous team. Because I watching on film, like, I knew they were good, and I knew they were athletic. Like, their point guard number 10 was the Big East freshman of the year. And then he played for Georgetown. He was a good player. He was a top 75 recruit out of high school, then transferred to Virginia, got a really good big-time NIL deal with Tony Bennett. But he's this way, and he wants to play fast, and Tony wanted to play slow, and they right. never kind of meshed. Then he transferred to Memphis with Penny Hardaway, and they kind of got into it on an issue, and then he transferred to Tennessee State. So, I mean, the kid's a good player, the point guard. And then they had some other bigs who played at higher-level schools and transferred down. So I knew they were a good team, and I kept telling our guys, I think by human error, Emmanuel has a game that we have, and he's feeling good about it. So I say this all the time. You drink the praise is just as poisonous as drinking the negativity. I mean, it's bad for you. And I'm telling you, Emmanuel hadn't played he barely played Arizona. He has 18-10, and everybody's calling the kid and telling him this and that, and you're this and that. And I could see it in his eyes. And I'm just telling you, I kept telling him, because I know where that happens, because he's a young guy. And what happened, guys went right to his chest. He didn't have a hit-first mentality. In Stanford, he was the one hitting first. So anyway, I say all that to say, yes, that was a big issue. And I think probably human nature, he maybe let his guard down, and he got punched.
Well, one of the other follow-ups. Here we go.
Yeah. Well, for the audience just tuning in, Coach Pastner went through a lot of the things that the team has done well through the season and a couple of things that didn't get applied in the game against Tennessee
State.
And
things that we didn't do well, haven't done well.
Yeah. And against Tennessee State, we're talking about physicality on defense. I'm not a big fan of glorifying taking a charge, but I do think there is a message that can be sent in taking a charge. Do you guys track that? Because that was another thing in that game against Tennessee State. I don't know that I really saw anyone get a position, throw themselves backwards, and try to draw it.
You know what, Steve? I think it's if you really look at the numbers in college basketball, the charge is not – there's not a lot of charges anymore. So number one,
which I kind of like actually.
Which number one, the rule.
It's getting crazy.
We in the old days you would practice just like drive it, take the charge, take the hit. But now, the rule is that if there's any contact and the secondary defender is not set before the guy plants his foot, it's an automatic block. Any contact that happens in the charge block circle, automatic block. So and then for the on the ball defender. Unless the guy moves your arm, there's no charge. It's all about the secondary defender. Unless the offensive guy, again, moves his arm or chugs his shoulder right into his chest, moves him backwards. So because they wanted a little more offense and they felt it was a dangerous play, guys sitting there going up in the air and trying to take the charge, they've ruled that out to me. It was an automatic block. So because of that, it's not only us. A lot of teams have gone away from the old charge drills and practicing it because – it's almost impossible to get a charge by standing there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because of any contact by the secondary defender, if you're not like there literally 2 seconds beforehand planted, it's going to be automatically a block. So I think that's part of an issue on that. In fact, we spend more time in the charge block circle working on just jumping straight up in the air so you don't get a foul called on you, a block. And that's if you're jumping straight up in the air, not turn your body straight up and down, then you're allowed to make that play in the charge block circle, in that little circle, and then there's no foul.
On pace of play.
Yep.
Did they do something to slow you down? Was it your guys? What do you think it was?
I thought there was two things on our pace of play. Number one is we didn't run in – this is our first time all year that we did not run in strike mode after misses. So let me tell you what my theory is on that. Number one, the amount of layups and free throws we missed, I thought it was demoralizing. It's demoralizing to the fans. It's demoralizing to the coach. It's demoralizing to your team. I mean, it happens once or twice, but when it happens over and over and over, one of the hardest things to coach is when you can't score. And when you're sitting there and you're shooting a free throw, hey, man, and I told the guys this the next day in the film session. I said, listen here, man, this isn't boys' high school basketball. You know, when someone writes me a note, they write me a note to Josh Pastor, men's college head basketball coach at UNLV. This isn't the boys' basketball coach. So this is men's college basketball. And in men's college basketball, your job is to make a layup and to make a free throw, for crying out loud. And I understand things can happen, that there's going to be a miss here and there, but you can't miss those because it's demoralizing when you go those stretches and can't score. So I think us playing a lot of guys that I did, which falls on the head coach's shoulder, no one else's, that we didn't really ever get in a rhythm. Because I was yanking guys. If you know how I am, if I feel a guy's not doing something, I'm pulling him right out. I think the bench is the best motivator, and I've always used the bench as the motivator. I have no problem using the bench. But when you're playing guys like I did, 10 guys, and a guy makes a mistake, and boom, and the next guy's in because you're playing everybody, that becomes a problem, because even if a guy makes a mistake, I can't have them looking over their shoulder, because basketball is such a free-flowing energy game, and we want to play with great pace. You can't be looking over your shoulder at coach all the time. You've got to be able to play with some freedom. And probably by me subbing, it slowed us down, and guys got a little tentative, and it was a mix of things. But you also got to give Tennessee State credit on that. But we missed a lot of just stuff that we, maybe we're sitting here talking differently.
I might step over the line here, but
go ahead. You're not stepping over the line.
No, there are times when you watch a big go up and a layup is more of a finesse play, when maybe they could go up and try to pound it. Now, yeah, I will say this right off the bat. Tyron Jones never goes up soft.
You're not
stepping. In fact, I think probably he tries to dunk it too many times. But he is going in to inflict some damage. And I thought there were a couple times like, layup. Let me go up kind of soft. Like, no. Go up and go through the defender.
Here's the terminology we use, Steve. And you're right. Sometimes Tyron has missed some point-blank opportunities because he's trying to dunk the rim and bring the rim down, and instead of just put the ball in the basket. But the terminology we use is you've got to vertically and violently finish at the rim. If you try to double pump and shy away from the contact, you're getting it blocked. It can't happen. And we don't have below the rim guys. Like we didn't. There's no one below the rim guys. You got to vertically and violently attack the rim, for crying out loud. And there can be no shying away from contact. Again, look. I can't play on the floor for him, but but that's what it's got to be, a mentality, and we work on it because we talk about finishing school and things like that. Now, Jacob missed a lot of layups, so you're probably talking about Jacob on that. That's one. In fairness to Jacob, he had been out for a few weeks with I think he was out of rhythm. He had only practiced back in a day and a half. Again, if I could have done it over again, and I told this to Ketch, my boss, that might catch him, that I would have just held Jacob and Howie, maybe told them both, Howie Fleming, because they had both been out for long. Say, listen, guys, you've been out for so long and haven't practiced barely that I'm not going to play you unless there's an emergency and we're going to work you another week in practice. Then I'm going to get you in next week versus Fresno. But I put him in, and I really think it screwed things up, just like it screwed up when I started Lodgy the first game of the year versus UT Martin. Had him practice day and a half, 2 days, whatever, a week or so, put him in the lineup. Did the same thing with Isaac Williamson. 2 days, at 3 games later versus Montana State, we playing 10 guys again because it screws it up. So to Jacob's defense, I probably should have given him a little more time, but I needed him to play to get in there, and I think part of it was he was probably a little out of sync because just a day before when he did practice, he was dunking everything. I just think he was a little out of sync on that. But, yes, Steve, we can't miss those. Kamani Hamilton, too. He's got to finish. I told him that. Like, you're there, and you might have got fouled, but the foul's got to be a bonus. It can't. You're too good, Kamani. You're too good. You're too, just like Jacob, you're too explosive. You're too powerful. Kamani, you're too good around that paint, man. You're one of the best in the country at in the paint. You can't. If they foul you, that's a bonus. But you got to expect you're going to get contact and vertically and violently finish at the rim. That's just how it's got to be. It's got to be that mindset.
There's Josh Pastner from the Josh Pastner radio show last night. They've got a game coming up, conference opener, 4 o'clock on Saturday against Fresno State. It's a game they should win. Fresno does have a good big guy. They do have a former UNLV commit and Bishop Gorman player. And Zane Collins, we know about his troubles. He's bounced back since. I like Pastner, but there's a couple of interesting things he said in that whole mix. First of all, you can ask him anything, which I think is great. That may come off in large part as blaming the players. But then he also takes blame at the end by saying, hey, maybe I've gone too deep on rotations when guys are just coming back. Do you like that honesty? Because I think some people could hear that and be like, hey, why is the coach questioning himself publicly?
He should be questioning himself. I mean,
I feel like no matter what a coach says, people are going to slice and dice it and come up with something they don't like.
Of course.
So I was just thinking of the alternative. Like, I appreciate the fact that he's looking at it. He's like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have had Jacob out there for more than like 10 minutes, Bernardi, because he did miss some layups on Saturday. Maybe right, I need to bring him back more slowly.
Right. But he put it on him rather than putting on the – he see, in the same respect – in the same respect, a different coach might say he's not ready to be out there. He's not, and put it on the kid. Right. He's not ready. He hasn't put in enough work. He needs to put in more time. Where he took the blame. Say, basically, what he's saying is player development. I shouldn't have put him out there. I need to build him up to that. I liked it.
Yeah, I like the way he tells us what he's telling the players.
Yeah,
you know, and he knew. I mean, I guess I didn't disguise it very well, but he knew exactly. What I was talking about with missed layups, you know, Jacob Bernardi missed some layups, and there's one. He's 6'9 and 230, and he's pretty explosive. He came down the right side in a half-court situation, was getting to the rim on the right side, and then I looked up, and I'm like, wait, how did he get to the left side? Now he's doing a reverse layup. I'm like, and he pinned it against the rim or got blocked or something. I'm like,
there's one thing for
come
sure.
Come on, go up strong. Let's go.
There's one thing for sure. Whether you're a player or you're Steve Cofield interviewing him, you better violently finish.
I know it. On this show, I want that to be our policy. We have to come in and be vertical and violent.
Vertical and violent.
Let's go vertical and violent. Yes. Yes. So it's still a work in progress, but here's the thing. There ain't much more time now to keep working on it. They got to progress. They got to start winning some games here. And these first two games in Mountain West Conference play are really important. They get Fresno State and Air Force at home. You got to win these games. Air Force went to San Diego State last night, lost 81-58. Fresno is a work in progress. We know all the problems that Vance Wahlberg had a year ago. He had 2 and 3 guys on the roster who had some gambling issues, so that busted up that whole team. Collins was kind of on the periphery of that. He's back. He's good. I like Jake Heidbreder, who's a guy who started at Air Force, went to Clemson, wolf in sheep's clothing. And what I mean by that is lanky, dorky-looking white guy, but, man, he can score. So they're going to have to defend that dude. And Fresno does have one of the better freshman bigs in the conference who's averaging – Jacques is averaging 6 points and 7 rebounds. So if they're asleep at the wheel, they could lose it.
You basically described a kid straight out of Gonzaga.
Well, I did – you know what? I appreciated the term on explosive guys who can finish at the rim. They're not below-the-rim guys. They're all below-the-rim guys who actually can play. Like UNLV had a below-the-rim guy in Devin Tillis, who is kind of lumpy, you know, at 6'5 and about 230 pounds. Well, you know, Devin went on from here. That was an Ops recruit. Devin went on from here to play at Irvine. He's now at Virginia getting playing time. I'll give you a below-the-rim guy, and I'm sure there's some old-timers who would be like, he was much better than that. But he actually was a below-the-rim, in-the-lane guy, was Adrian Dantley. You remember his game?
Yeah.
6'5", and if he got in the lane, there's 17 pumps, there's spins, there's footwork. He's just unstoppable scorer. Was
slash,
not going to go up
slasher
and be like,
before we do it a slasher.
Was not going to go up and hammer one home.
Right.
But a really good player.
But he could finish violently.
He
could get vertical.
Yeah, he could. All right, last minute or so here, right? Well, not even that. Give me your read on VGK now. With they're going to hit the road and then come back for some home games. There are some big games coming up here to close out 2025.
There is 8-game point streak after last night's loss. One thing I will say is I like the goaltending, even though they're coming off a loss. Akira Schmidt and Carter Hart are both playing. They're keeping the Golden Knights in the game, in games. The offense has to come around. The question is, what is going on with Jack Eichel? Is he sick? Is he injured? We don't know the story.
Back tomorrow. Treasure Island is the site. Come on out. We got prizes that we'll give away at Treasure Island. And happy hour starts 7 days a week at 10 a.m. $5 on the draft beer at Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sports Bar.